Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Jules Holland. I'm joined by
Jim Moyer, here sitting beside Jules Holland.
And we have a very special guest on this podcast. We will be discussing with him his life, his career, his aspirations, his dreams, and some of the motoring interest things that he might have
but
had.
But not just motoring, it's going to be travel as well. Just general travel, anecdotes regarding travel, bus journeys, traffic.
Cars, planes, roads.
Yeah.
All sorts of other things as
showbiz
well.
Showbiz journeys.
Showbiz revelations we're going to be
revealing. Revelations, yes.
And we've got a very special guest here. And I think we should say how we know, all sort of got to know one another.
Well, let's all wear badges with our names on and talk about each other and say
okay,
who we
so,
are.
Well,
let's pretend it's an AA meeting or something like that.
And we can reveal, well, the Automobile Association.
Yes, exactly. Hello, my name is Jim, and I know you, Jules. We'll go around the table.
Yes.
I know you, Jules, because I've known you. Well, how long have we known each other? I would say way over 30 years.
Oh, more than that, I should say, probably. I remember when you first were in Deptford, and you were playing in the pubs. Actually, Glenn Tilbrook took me to see you in
That's
a pub.
That's right, yes.
Performing. You came up and performed on the Tube, I remember. That must have been in 1984 or something. So I think you're talking about like 35 more
and
years
ago. And we're recording this in your studio, which was our old office, where we... Bob and I commanded our position as top light entertainers and and wrote The Big Night Out and Smell of Reeves and Mortimer, etc.
Yes.
And we're sitting here now with your ex-band mate, member.
One of the greatest poets of whose songs are sung around the world, who's a great songwriter, a great man and a great fellow, who I first met probably... I must have been aged about maybe 16 or something, and I looked up, he's a couple of years older than me then, he still is apparently, and I looked up to him very much then as a sort of a role model, and he's here now with a different set of trousers, which he had then, because he had some loon trousers I was very jealous of, but he's here, and he's an absolute marvel, and it is Chris Difford.
Oh, yes, thank you very much. Yes, we've known each other for over 47 years. Isn't that an amazing thing?
Oh, my goodness. We should have some celebration in 3 years' time.
We should indeed. I remember the first time we met, you came round to Maxine's house in Blackheath and you played Boogie Woogie Piano. I'd never heard Boogie Woogie Piano in my life because I grew up on a council estate and there was none of that kind of stuff.
It was banned.
too dangerous.
Too dangerous. And you played this wonderful Mead Lux Lewis piece and you'd had a bit too much to drink, I think, and you fell off the piano at the end and we've been friends ever since.
Yes, thank you. And I should just say that Chris said to me after that first piano piece, because he said he'd never heard Boogie Woogie, he actually said to me, I think, I've heard all the Boogie Woogie pianos and this is one of the best I've ever heard. And I believed him. And he was and then this is an important thing, which I went to his in another little transport store. I went round to his bedroom he lived in the council estate up the road here, and in his bedroom, which was very tidy, and he had like great things on the wall that I wanted, like some Velvet Underground poster or things like this, and it was tidy. He had books of poetry, and there was something like this is really an interesting room. But the best thing of all that he had, which I thought was such a fantastic thing to do, he had a dinky toy lorry. Which he just used the articulated back as an ashtray. I thought, oh, that's so chic. I mean, that's so beyond, you know, I don't know what David Bowie was.
That's council estate chic, isn't it?
Yeah,
that
from then on, that was all I would use, just these old lorries as my ashtrays.
Yeah.
The first time I remember meeting you, Jim, was at the Albert Hall when Squeeze were playing and you did the bingo for us.
That was, and I think, was that your idea?
Yes, it was.
That was Jules's idea.
Did it work very well?
It was terrible, and I knew it was one of the worst moments I've ever had on stage because I was on stage at the and the idea was everyone shouted house at the same time, and then you all kicked in and at the same time. But the thing was that I was calling out the numbers and they were echoing around the room and no one was writing down the same numbers at the same time, which was the plan. So I knew within the first few seconds that it was all going to go wrong and it was just a pointless bingo because there wasn't even a prize at the end of it. And I think I ran off somewhere halfway through thinking there's no way out of this, so I'm just gonna leg it.
I still have the pen from the gig.
Oh
yeah, there you go.
How amazing. They do sing your songs all around the world because in Australia they were singing Call for Cats, in America they were singing Tempted. I mean, and they're all singing these all over the place. In Japan they sing your praises.
Oh. I haven't heard your praises. Is it a good one?
It's a good one, yeah. It's a good one.
What about Greenland?
Greenland, no, never had the only number one record Squeeze ever had was in Israel.
Nowhere near Greenland.
Nowhere near Greenland.
I was looking at Greenland out of interest to see what... Because there's not that many people live there on a huge continent like that. Is it a continent?
That's right.
Yeah, you said that with some vague conviction. And I was looking into it and there's only one rapper in Greenland, which makes him the best and the worst.
Yes, definitely.
The greatest rapper in Greenland. But when you had you say you had a number one record in Israel. What was that then?
Is That Love from the East Side Story album. I believe it was number one there. We always had number twos. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes.
Call for Cats, Up the Junction. Call for Cats was kept off the number one slot by Tubeway Army. And Up the Junction by Simon and... No, by Art Garfunkel. Oh. With a song about rabbits.
Well, there you are.
Arthur Garfunkel and his rabbit song.
Yeah, and he wears a good wig, doesn't he?
Is that a wig?
Oh, yeah.
Is it really? Because I've heard these rumours. Because it slipped back a bit. He wants to push it forward a bit.
And that's very much one of the reasons it's worth listening to this podcast, because you get all of these sort of inside showbiz stories that would never be revealed in the public arena normally.
So much name dropping there's going to be, isn't there?
In this one?
I think in all of them, there's a lot of name-dropping, a lot of showbiz anecdotes and name-dropping.
Before we do that, I think we should talk about, you said about your having an enormous head.
it's true.
It's another showbiz story, like Arts Week, you know, can we hear about your enormous head? It's probably a lot of the public don't realise that.
I've got a huge... Well, yeah. I was saying, because I have to get special hats made, because my head is... It was measured at the BBC, and they announced quite flamboyantly that I had the largest head that's ever been measured at the BBC, which has always made it tricky for me to buy a hat, which most people are 7 1/8, things like that. I'm about 18 inches across.
And is this because of your enormous sort of brain, do you think? Is that one of the reasons of your vast head?
Well, I think hats are a very good store for ideas and thoughts. People keep things in hats as well, don't they? Criminals keep money in the hats.
Yeah, a gun. I mean,
I
used to have a drink in a pub with the people from the Grenadier Guards Band. And when they do the Trooping of the Colour, they have a little joke amongst themselves. And again, this is sort of a showbiz secret, MOD secret I'm letting out here. They'd have a competition amongst themselves about who could put the daftest thing under their hat for the Trooping of the Colour and then sort of get it out afterwards. He said, and you get sort of people who did really, stupid things, like they'd have a little sort of bottle piss or something stupid like that. Although one bloke had a gerbil, he thought that was quite funny. But if you've got to have it all there all morning, it can be a bit much. Anyway, people would take their bear skins off in the barrack rooms afterwards, and you could tell by the amount of applause that something got whether it went popular or not. He said anyway, the out and out winner was this bloke. He took his bear skin off, and he had a little tiny scale model of the Nuremberg War Trials.
That's really nice, though, isn't it?
Yes, unbelievable.
I'd have another bear skin under it, and then another one under that, like Russian dolls, I had a tiny one.
Yeah.
The size of a thimble.
It's kind of an egg or something.
Yeah, and then a little model of your head underneath it.
Oh, wow. Now it's getting... Yeah.
I have a hat story. Do you remember during the Argy Bargy days, I used to wear that sort of black leather hat?
Oh, yes. It was very popular with the people.
Yeah. Well, at Lewisham Odeon, when we played there, I threw it into the crowd at the end of the show. And about 2 years ago, it came up on eBay.
Oh.
Interestingly. So I tried to buy it, but the guy wouldn't sell it to me.
Why?
I don't know. I found it really odd.
How curious.
Yes.
So you threw the hat into the audience.
Mm, and he kept it all that time. And then he put it on eBay. I think the story goes is that he wanted me to sign it and then send it back to him.
And throw it back.
Yeah, throw it back.
Do a reenactment, except, of course, Lewisham Odeon's gone.
Yeah, and what a great place that was.
Yes.
The Beatles.
Yes.
Supremes.
Yes.
David Bowie.
Yeah, I saw Gladys Knight there.
Did you?
I think we played, didn't we play with the Blockheads or the Police there once?
The Police,
well?
Yeah. I remember them dyeing their hair blonde in the dressing room, yeah.
So, Chris, I mean, I was in Squeeze with you, so we've got a lot of happy shared memories of that. Part of the thing that we'd like to talk about in our podcast is transport, really, and the tribute to transport. You know, some people like trains, planes, cars, boats, you know, roller skates, all sorts of methods of transport. But, for instance, are you a car man?
Well, the first thing that I did with my first PRS check was buy a Morris Minor from a friend of yours who used to supply you Buicks. Do you remember him?
Eddie, was it?
Eddie, indeed, yeah.
So you supplied Buicks and Morris Minors?
Yes, I don't know why. It's a strange mixture. And it was a soft top, so the roof came off. And I didn't have a driving licence, but Cindy, my wife at the time, she did. So we used to drive around in it. It was great fun. And I got the sort of nipple for cars then. You know, I just really couldn't leave them alone. And when I was driving up here, I was remembering a time when I had a Jaguar and we were driving from a gig in Glasgow to Liverpool and I was trying to show you how fast it could go and it car blew up. Do you remember?
Yeah, that's
that?
Right. I was really impressed. Yes.
It was a brand new car and it just blew up.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was I think you were attempting the land speed record on the M6.
Yeah.
Showing you know, to see what the car will do.
I know. And they came to pick us up and took us to the venue with the car on the back. And, it was just so sad. But more importantly, I had a Jaguar hand-built, and that is it there. You can see it in the photograph. In the photograph, I'm wearing a jacket leaning on the front of the car. And I don't know if you remember that, Jules.
Well, I do remember this car. I've got a photograph of this car parked over the road here, actually.
Yeah.
And it was a great highlight for us all to see because it had been the result of an absolutely every expense spent restoration.
Yes.
And it was like a brand new car.
Yeah, by Vicarage Cars.
Yes.
So they bought the car, or we bought the car for £1,500 and then it cost £36,000 to build. But what a car. What a car.
I've got one of these at the moment, a Mark II, like that. It's a lovely car, but they do need tending to.
They do, and they slip and slide.
But going back to Morris Minors, the first car I ever got was with my friends. Four of us chipped in and bought a Morris Traveller for 50 quid, which had mushrooms growing out of the woodwork on the windows.
Was that an extra? Or
what, the mushrooms?
Yes.
Well, we'd went on a long trip. We drove it from the north to the south, and the mushrooms remained.
the integrity of
those mushrooms was paramount.
When you say from north to the south,
we went from Darlington to we went to Cambridge, and we stopped outside. And this is where the end of the Morris Traveller story. This is where it ends because we stayed at I think it was a bed and breakfast in Cambridge. And the brakes gave way overnight and it rolled to the end of the car park and over the edge of a brick wall and laid there on its on the chassis. So we just all ran off and got the train and it was never seen again.
I do remember having a Morris Traveller, a maroon one, beautifully made. And we were making an album called Frank and our producer was from America and he'd never seen this car in his life before, and I picked him up in it, and he said, "Is this a Tudor car?"
Well, very good.
Did you reply, "No, it's mock Tudor"?
Mock Tudor, yes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I mean, do you enjoy a travel quiz? I mean, you've spent your life, like many musicians, touring.
Yeah, since I was 16 or 17, my case has been in the car and I've been going somewhere to a gig, mainly. But yeah, the journeying is everything, isn't it? I mean, it's like flying to America for the first time on Freddie Laker's plane. And, you know, that the whole point of journeying and getting in a van and driving around America for like 2.5 months, the journey was the most important part.
Yes, that's right, seeing that. And that must have inspired you to write quite a lot of your words going around seeing the... In fact, there was one, I think there was a great one you wrote about Tipitina Tree, where you're driving around. But a lot of that's driving around for America for months on end. Was that inspiration for you?
It was, and I remember being in New Orleans, and that's where the lyric Up the Junction was written, strangely enough.
Oh, sitting, not in Clapham at all, but
in... Not in Clapham.
But where jazz was born, so was... So Up Junction,
sitting on the porch at the Rip Van Winkle Hotel. I remember we couldn't afford to stay in town, so we had to stay at the Rip Van Winkle, which was out of town. And I was doing my laundry at the time, and I was thinking, I really miss home. And so I started writing notes about home, and that's where the lyric originally came from.
How extraordinary. You see, I think we've learned something very interesting on the on this podcast here, that's where that was born. Did you know that? I've known him for years.
I never knew that.
I was there when he was laundering his money. I have no idea that that's what he was doing.
So you wrote all of Up the Junction now, or just part of it?
Just the lyric, and then Glenn wrote the music.
Well, you just wrote Up the Junction?
No, the whole lyric.
Oh, the...
yeah. And it is, I mean, that I never thought it would happen when we were going to go from Clapham, is to this day, that couplet alone, became an anthem for lots of... London folk and folk all over the world.
I know, I adore that lyric. It doesn't have a chorus to it, and you know, I remember our manager saying to us, "You've got to write a chorus to stick in there," but we didn't.
That is quite strange, though, isn't it? I mean, what other songs haven't got choruses?
Virginia Plain.
That has another no. Mm. Yeah.
And it ends with the title of the song, just like Up the Junction.
Or is it like in an old songs, without being a pedant? Is it like when they just go round the same sequence again and again? It's the chorus, 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 and it's almost like there isn't a verse, if you see what I mean.
Oh, yeah. No, you could look at it like that.
You know, yeah. I wonder if you're in the structure of it. Because there's a good middle, there's a very clever, extraordinary middle eight to it, deconstructing it.
It's a complicated middle eight. Yes, it is. But it's a brilliant one, too.
Can you play it?
I can play it now, but in the old days when we were on stage, I used to turn down when we got to that bit.
Me too. I think it was only Glenn playing.
He just left the stage.
Yes. And of course, the going back to the transport side of it, when I remember we got to be on, I think it was the Top of the Pops with that song, the BBC sent limos for us. Or the record company sent limos for us, which were these, I think they were these giant Austin Princess.
Yes.
Or maybe they were Daimlers, but they were like a sort of car that the mayor of Huddersfield might have had. Mm. And I remember the driver picking me up and saying, "Yeah, go on, enjoy your big day, mate. Like, it's going to be all over after this. This is the one thing." Oh, thanks very much.
Yeah.
And then we're all in the back of it, having sort of, you know.
No, I remember it coming around our council estate and everybody thought somebody had died, you know.
Yeah.
Nero was in pink trousers sitting in the back going, "On my way to the BBC."
And now a message from our sponsors. Jules, I must say, those shoes you're wearing are very smart. How did you achieve such a lustrous colour?
Well, it's perfectly easy, Jim. I use Dulux emulsion paint. And now I can attend the Lord Mayor's Ball with integrity.
Capital. I too shall enjoy the benefits of Dulux paint upon my boots as I intend to visit Lord Marlborough this Lent.
It's the impression that you have of different types of transport. I mean, I think people used to think the aeroplanes were a glamorous way of getting around. Although you never liked travelling on aeroplanes, did you? I remember we used to travel together. You never liked flying. A lot of Aretha Franklin never liked it either, did she?
Not been a big fan of flying, but I've got lots of stories of flying.
I used to like it when you did the the tube and you'd come back from Newcastle Airport on a plane that was full of pop stars.
Yes, yeah.
And I remember the Womacks being on it, and I think they've probably, the Womack, the entire family was on there, and I think that was probably all the seats taken.
Fantastic flight, and they changed the flight back from Newcastle when we did the tube in the 80s, because it was at 7:30, but our show, it was at 7, but the show finished at 7, so they made it 7:30, so you could dash and get to the airport. I remember being on one of them, like you say, all the people on the show, on one of them, there was, I think it was Elton John, there was some other huge, great stars, was it maybe George Michael, somebody, all these people on the plane, and it was the most bumpy flight I've ever been.
Well, because they're all jumping up and down, dancing, singing.
What a lovely idea. Anyway, no, this is a showbiz story, and Paul Yates, my co-host, is looking really like worried, and the plane's bouncing around, and there's really bad turbulence. So to reassure her, as I would to any passenger or somebody who was nervous to fly, I said, well, don't worry about this. I said, you know, these planes are built to withstand a tremendous amount of turbulence. You know, actually, you could make the tips of the two wings could lift up above the plane and touch one another, and it would still carry on flying. One of the engines would fall off. It wouldn't make any difference. It'd still land perfectly. But you don't worry about all this. It's, you know, the technology is so far advanced. This bumping is nothing to worry about at all. And she said to me, I couldn't care less about thinking bumping. I'm worried about the billing. I said, what do you mean the billing? She said, if the plane goes down, it will be Elton killed in crash. Turn to page 3 to see who the others are. Oh, I'm going to be the others.
My flying phobia was so much so that Breakfast TV invited me on to do a special Paul McKenna one-off where he treats me and gets me through my flying.
What, hypnotises you?
Yeah, all of that stuff.
And what happened?
So we went to a tiny little airport, tiny little plane, 7 o'clock in the morning, camera crew in this tiny plane, and Paul McKenna, and we sit at the end of the runway, and he starts talking to me, trying to get me into this kind of zone where I'm, you know, in some special place. And all I could think was, I can't stand this bloke's voice. It's driving me bloody mad.
Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah,
part
but
of
then,
his skills.
But then the plane took off. And we hit some turbulence, and he was more nervous than I was. And this was all being filmed for breakfast telly, you know.
And Chris is a poet. I happen to know that General Motors in America in the 1950s, they employed poets to think up names for cars. So they came up with great names, the Cadillac Eldorado, the Ford Mustang. You know, they're great names, you know, the Stingray. Mm. Great names for, you know, like they kind of, they suggest.
Well, they've got that kind of American bravado, haven't they?
Unlike the Hillman Imp or the singer Gazelle, they have a great excitement to them. But Chris had a great, and I said to him, as a poet, have you ever thought of a car name? And you did have one for the Audi, didn't you?
Audi Doody.
Yeah, exactly. Did you propose that to Audi? What did they say?
Well, I did to the guy on the shop floor, but I used to, when I was working with, lucky enough to work with Brian Ferry, I did have the sort of hotline to Audi, and I did manage to spring it on the lady there, but she didn't.
Hang on, was that you were working with Brian Ferry?
Mm.
So you, of course, had a hotline to Audi. I don't get that.
What sort of circles do you mix in? Do you not realise that's how it works?
Well, we got a wonderful A8, and I picked Brian up in it, and he said, it's a really nice car, isn't it? And he sat in the back while I was driving it. He said, it's not the long wheelbase one, though, is it? I said, no, it isn't. He said, send it back. So we had to wait for a long wheelbase one to come, which then did arrive. And he just sat in the back the whole time. It was brilliant.
So you were his chauffeur?
Yeah. And in fact, I said that to him one day. I said, Brian, you know, it, rather than me being your sort of PA, which is what I was employed to do, I turned into being your driver. And he said, yes, yes, yes. And then the next day, a hat box arrived from German Street with a chauffeur's hat in it, just to show that Brian had a really good sense of humour. Yeah. I still have it.
Do you wear it when you're driving?
I do, but sadly Brian's not in the back anymore. But
well, he'd always, you know, get a pillow with his face on it, draw his face on it.
That's what we all do.
I watched it. I was on a train recent, well, not recently, about a year ago, and a fella in a seat adjacent to me, but further up, was watching a film with subtitles on, and I watched the whole thing with him, and he didn't know.
What a result.
Out of interest, I'd like to ask, pose this to the team. Does anybody have a particular favourite, well, it could be a car, a boat, a train, anything, favourite bit of transport in a film?
A film with Richard Todd called Never Let Go, where he's saved up all his money for a Ford Anglia. He gets it, and then and it's his pride and joy, and then it gets stolen by Peter Sellers. That is my favourite moment with a car. I actually worked with Richard Todd once in Randall and Hopkirk. Anyway, that's my story.
My favourite piece of transport in a film has got to be Magical Mystery Tour.
Oh, yeah.
That particular bus. Always remember the smell of those buses. I don't know if you remember them. They had a wonderful sort of cross leather and sort of curtainy kind of smell.
Mm.
And, yeah, I love that smell.
I think it was a very strong... I mean, when being on tour bus with you, there was always a very strong aromas.
There was a strong aroma, yeah. And tour buses are a story into themselves. I remember being very taken by the fact that you'd spend hours in your bunk sometimes as we were going across the States, only to discover at the end of the tour that you'd painted the Sistine Chapel on the roof of your bunk.
That's right. And they tried to send me a bill to have it cleaned off. I said, I should be sending you a bill for having...
Work of art.
Put in the Sistine Chapel on the above the bunk.
Work of art, yeah.
Thank you. I don't know if it's
still exists. That's a very nice story. I like that story. So what's your favourite mode of transport in a film?
Well, let me have I think I should have asked the question, but I haven't thought about the answer. I think my favourite mode of transport... I mean, there's a lot of great cars in films, of course, but I think my favourite car film is quite rare, and it's called I Am a Car. And it was made by the Austin Motor Company when they were the biggest manufacturer of cars in Britain, sending the cars out all over the world. And it's basically, it says, I'm a car. And it shows you the Austin range and how they're tested to work in the snow, in the desert and so forth. And then it says, and then it puts, like you were saying with the sat-nav, you would have the voice of the particular people. It will have a farmer's voice. It says, I'm a car, I'm a farmer's car. I've got to be sturdy in the winter and get up and work at all hours. And it's the car's voice. And it's, I'm a salesman's car. And then you have this bloke taking gowns out of the back and selling cosmetics and so forth to a lovely parade of suburban Tudor Beaton shops. And then you'd have, I'm a young man, and I need a young man's car. And it was really, so each car had its own voice. So I think that it's probably on YouTube if people want to look it up.
I'm going to look that up instantly. And also, let us not forget Hell Drivers.
Oh, super, with Patrick McGoohan.
Stanley Baker and Sean Connery. Very young Sean Connery, which, but that's lorries. And that's a story for another time.
Yes.
Well, I think we've probably covered everything there, haven't we? And it really leads us only to say thank you and goodbye.
Thank you very much to our very special guest, Chris Difford. It's been marvellous having you here. You've been a superb guest, and thank you for sharing those marvellous memories and revealing for the first time ever where Up the Junction was written, which isn't where people thought.
It's a pleasure.
Goodbye, Chris. There he goes, driving off into the distance in his mock Tudor car.
His Tudor Beaton Morris. What a great treat to have that man here in this room with us.
A car that has turrets.
Yes, it would be just at home as it would on a city street, particularly if that city was Stratford-upon-Avon, where the great Bard lived, with all those half-timbered buildings.
Crenellations.
Have you got a motoring-related song there?
I most certainly have. My old mane says follow the vein, ain't a dilly-dally on the way. Oft went the vein with me own pegs in it, I will be on with me old cup linny, but I did ain't dilly. Don't know where to look, and you can't trust a special like an old time cuppa when you can't find your way home. Ta-da.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50,
luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.